All right, he's part of the mighty 1090, right, Raph? 1090 down in San Diego. He's a regular on our show every time the Friars take on the Giants. That is Craig Elston. Craig, how are you?
Doing fine, Marty. How are you?
Well, we're okay, and I guess suffering through a little bit of a disappointing season. But, you know, we've talked numerous times, and the Giants have had trouble with the Padres. They're 3-4 with them now, but I think they've lost something like 12 of the last 17 to the Padres for some reason or other. And here we have Bumgarner and Chacin. And I want to say one thing, listening to the game. Of course, I'm in the studio last night and listening to the game. And every time you heard a cheer, I said, gee, I guess something bad happened for the Giants. But it was actually good for the Giants. It's incredible, the crowds. really, it's incredible to me, the vocal crowd that shows up down in San Diego.
Well, and it's the case when the Dodgers come to town, too, as well. I think with L.A., you've got both a great club and great proximity for their fans. But there's a lot of Giants fans that live in Southern California, a lot of Giants fans that live in San Diego. And, you know, I can tell you, Marty, that back in the early 2000s at Qualcomm Stadium, before the Giants had won anything, there were passionate, loud, vocal Giants fans down here in San Diego. It's something, frankly, I've just gotten used to over the years, expecting to hear a pro-Giants crowd. And the fact that the Padres have been anything but competitive in the 2010s makes it a lot easier for those tickets to come available.
All right. Well, the Padres are playing a lot better. I mean, they were 15-30, I think, in the first 45, and they're over 500 now in the next 40-some-odd games or so. What's up with the Padres? And I guess the big question, answer that one, then we'll talk a little bit about July 31st and how they may play in that area.
Well, you're right, Marty. 24-23 over the last 47 games, which is a little bit too good for a team that's attempting to have a bottom three season this year as part of the buildup toward the end of the decade when the Padres think they're going to be very good. The reason, to answer specifically your question, why the team has played better since the opening 45 games, you have to point to a handful of people. I'm going to start, just for purpose of discussion, with the person who's on the mound tonight. Julius Chacin, over the course of his last, I believe, 8 starts, has pitched to something around a 2.4 ERA. He's been very much a number one starter over the course of the last month and a half. So you have a guy, Chacin, pitching well. Luis Perdomo is a right-hander who, again, especially the first two times through the order, can be very tough. He's got good stuff. Young pitcher who's starting to learn. So there's a couple of starters who have done okay. You saw Richard, you saw a typical Richard outing, I think, yesterday. A lot of hits allowed, tries to keep you in the game. The bullpen has been very good, led by their all-star Brad Hand, but guys like Buchter and Maurer have been fairly efficient over the course of the last 50-ish games. And then offensively, you have to highlight Jose Perella, a player who came up from AAA. He was a part of the Yankees system, ex-Yankees farmhand, about a 280 minor league hitter in well over 1,000 minor league games. And he's hitting around 280 right now in the majors, but for a while was hitting 320, 330, and has been more often than not a nice offensive spark plug for the Padres in left field, which is something they did not have prior to that. Perella probably just a flare going off. You don't expect that to be something he's going to be able to do long term, but he's been doing it, and thanks to that, it's allowed the Padres to score a few runs, and when they do get a lead, the bullpen's been pretty good about locking it down.
Well, Craig Elston with us. You and I have had that conversation probably for about 15 years now. About the Padre bullpen being able to lock it down even when Bochy was there with Trevor Hoffman. That's a trademark of San Diego baseball. They made so many trades of players back and forth, and they got a lot of young talent and traded some young talent to Washington as well. Are those trades paying off, in your opinion?
Well, you know, what we're seeing now, Marty, is a franchise that over a 2.5-year period really did themselves a ton of disservice, and in pursuit of trying to get a quick win, figured it out halfway through last year, and now they are on a long-term build towards something that they think can be more permanent. I mean, the answer to A.J. Preller's winter of 2014, in terms of those trades, he set the franchise back by years and years with what happened. And in particular, even though, it should be noted that right-handed pitcher Joe Ross is going to undergo Tommy John surgery, and that was just announced in about the last hour or so. He was one of the two players, but the trade of Joe Ross and, more importantly, Trey Turner to Washington to get Will Myers, boy, that trade has just looks worse. I mean, month over month, it looks worse. And hey, Myers is the one guy out of all of the players acquired in that early 2015 rush that's going to be here, at least seemingly, for a while. But, his strikeout rate has skyrocketed. He's showing to me that over, a good 3 years now, he's pretty much a 250 to 260 hitter, with some power, but also a spectacular amount of strikeouts, not much plate discipline. So if you just could swap Myers for Turner alone, that would have been a major upgrade for the Padres. If you think about a lot of the young players that they let go in pursuit of players such as Matt Kemp and Justin Upton, et cetera, those trades, if you could have reversed them all, this team would be a lot closer to contending. But I will say that with all of that, the Padres ownership, their new GM, they tried something. It spectacularly failed, and they did recognize that, didn't double down upon it. And now, through all of the investment they had last year in the international market, combined with the trades they made last year to move some players out, get some good young things coming in, they feel like they've done a good job in the draft the last couple of years as well. You're now in a position where I think probably next year, bad too, but 2019, 2020, you're going to see this wave of talent that right now is going from single A to double A in the Padres system, touchdown in San Diego.
Wow, great report from Craig Elston, the mighty 1090. And patience is a virtue in baseball. You got to be patient, especially with young players. It just doesn't happen overnight. Coming up, we've got the trade deadline. Of course, we have all the talk about the Giants and what could happen here. What about down there? The one guy, when his name came out a couple of months ago, I said, of course, the Giants maybe could have been in contention then. And, with Will Smith hurt, I said, boy, Brad Hand. I love this guy. I love the lefty, and I love what he can get done. And since then, of course, the Giants have fallen out of it, and Hand's stock has risen in the world of baseball. But other than Brad Hand, and maybe you could comment on him, anyone else sort of sought after with the Padres?
Well, I mean, you certainly identified the top possible player to be moved. I around here, I think it's a near inevitability that Brad Hand would be moved. And, even though he is controllable through 2020, there's truly no reason not to. It would be a blunder not to trade a player like Hand, because relievers are fungible. They are the most volatile thing on the market. So if you've got one that's hot, and you're not good right now, you should move that thing in order to become better down the road. So I expect Hand to be traded. From what we've heard, maybe half the teams in baseball are interested. And I think, an expert on 1090 earlier this week, Keith Law from ESPN, says he thinks you could get a ranked 50 to 100 type prospect, maybe one guy like that for Brad Hand. Well, that would be a really nice return. Now, the man who pitches tonight, if he continues to throw six innings, one run, like he's been doing for the last month and a half, I think Julys Chacín could be one of those types of pitchers that on July 30th or 31st, a GM that was pursuing a bigger name, a brighter talent, and came up short, lost out in a bidding war, might turn to Chacín as the type of acquisition as a fourth or fifth starter for a playoff team that could provide some innings and some depth down the stretch. I don't know that he's looked at as a top three starter that could pitch in a playoff rotation, but I think it's a depth acquisition. That's a player to keep an eye on. Another name I'll give you, Marty, is Trevor Cahill, the right-hander out of Vista High School, formerly North County, San Diego. He has been injured a little bit this year. If you look at his numbers, they're okay, the strikeout rate is good. But one thing about Cahill, he's very effective, especially the first time through. He had some effective reliever stints with the Chicago Cubs a couple of years ago, and I could see a team look at a Trevor Cahill as a type of pitcher you could bring in to become a middle reliever, a strong seventh inning type reliever for a playoff roster. So those are a couple of the names that you could look at. You've seen Cahill hand. The Padres probably would have traded Yanjarvis Solarte if he hadn't gotten hurt, but he's had an oblique injury that's kept him off the market. And outside of that, I really don't see anybody that would either attract much attention from the outside or, you know, thus be a player that the Padres would want to move in terms of position players.
Oh, great report. Well, we will see Chacin tonight. And, of course, I think I looked it up. 9 of his last 10, 3 earned runs or less, what you're alluding to. He has been absolutely terrific. And I guess if they had a home playoff game in San Diego, I'd get him. Because San Diego, he's got a 168 earned run average with a 0.92 walks to hits to innings pitched. And he's been absolutely fabulous at home for the Padres. So if you can get your playoff games in San Diego, he's not a number 4. He's a number 1 for me. All right. Now, tomorrow, Cahill, we also see him against Samardzija tomorrow. And Samardzija's name has come up. And Steve Fishman, who's producing the show, will tell us about that in the trademark. But tomorrow's Cahill, and I thought when the Cubs had him, I thought Madden used him brilliantly, maybe just a little too much, and he tired. But I agree with you. This is a guy in a playoff situation can take you from the fifth inning to the seventh inning, and he could be very valuable, and we do get to see him tomorrow.
Yeah, I think he's kind of an underrated player that could make an impact. You know, and not dissimilar to Hand's stock has risen to the point that everyone's writing articles about him now. But, you know, he's not an Aroldis Chapman, you know, in terms of the type of players who were moved last year or even an Andrew Miller. But he is that lefty that, in you know, and I think the All-Star game was exactly what the Padres wanted. Hand came in. He struck out an All-Star lefty in Robinson Cano. He threw a 1-2-3 and showed maybe some GMs that, yeah, if it comes down to facing a Robbie Cano in a big spot in September or coming down to facing a huge left-handed bat, that Brad Hand can be that guy. You know, it's fascinating to me, by the way, Marty, just as a kind of a side note, to see this Giants team struggle with their spot in approaching the trade deadline because they're, I'm not going to say in a similar position because the core is stronger to where the Padres were 2 years ago. But you do have to wonder, is this group getting too old too fast? If you double down, if you wait a year too long, could you really hinder your return to the top? Or can it be cobbled back together in short fashion and put back together with some guys bouncing back? So it's very difficult. And at that point where they realized early last year that the Padres were too old too fast, that guys like Kemp and James Shields, you know, were going to be hindering them for years to come, I think the job that Preller did at that time to shed that money and to get those players out is a little bit underrated, in fact, in what he was able to do to at least hasten the turnaround. I'll tell you honestly, I thought in early 2015 the Padres were going to be terrible for maybe a decade. Wow. As a result of those trades that were made, I thought they were going to be old, slow, and expensive for the next 5 years and then have to build their way out of it. They at least hit eject at the right time to avoid a decade of misery. I think this is going to be a great team in a couple, 3 years, but it's very dangerous, and if you miss that window, it can be a long slog. So good luck to the Giants on how they approach this thing.
All right. Well, it's good advice because the Giants are struggling with that now. Craig, thank you so much. Where do we find you on Twitter? How do we follow you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at 619 Sports. And if you are a Padres fan, our weekly Padres podcast, Make the Padres Great Again is the name of it, and is available on iTunes and Google Music Play and Stitcher. And it's a lot of fun.
Beautiful. Thanks always for coming on. And really, Padres have been a thorn in the side of the Giants here for a couple of years now. And I love their young players. So you did a good job of getting us ready for tonight's game with Chacin. So enjoy it, and I appreciate it. Thanks, Greg.
All right, Marty. We'll talk to you next time. Take care.
Very good. Boy, great. Ref, we've had him on since you and I have been together. You know that? How many? 14 years or something? And always a great report.
when he was actually on the Mighty 690.
Yeah, what was he on? He was on 1090.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Now he's on 1090, but before he was the Mighty 690.
And he's at 619 Sports, so a lot of numbers. But, boy, he gives you a great report, and his podcast sounds pretty good.